This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Yay, enemies, 420 edition. Thanks for joining. This is Lisa Traeger, your host. I'm here every week. Thanks for listening. Truly an honor and a pleasure. For 420, we have a perfect guest, my stoner bestie, my comedy store friend. It's thrilling. Right now I'm at the Ace Hotel in Brooklyn. I am trying my best to survive and thrive, and my brain is going, no, 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 bitch. You are going to spiral. So I'm in a spiral. But I guess the Ace is a perfect place to spiral. I did pay extra for a city view room. And when I checked in, I was looking at a building. So I called and went, honey, I'm going to need a refund. You got to give me some money back or move me. And they moved me. But my city view is of Brooklyn. I don't need to look at Brooklyn. I thought I was going to stare at the Chrysler building. Go fuck yourselves. But everyone that works here is incredible. And I did feel crazy. And then I called down for something else, and the guy goes, I saw your email address. Are you famous? I go, I'm not famous. And he goes, well, you give off famous energy. And I go, well, that is terrible news. That means I'm acting like a fucking asshole, but nothing to back it up. So thrilling for me. I have drank everything out of the mini bar that's non-alcoholic, which is even worse and more embarrassing. Listen, I came in for a wedding. I fucked up. I had to leave early. I went on a date yesterday. Truly, like, he yelled at me about nonsense, about comedy. And it's like, that's why you can't tell anyone what you do in life. And I just, it ruined my mood. I was just getting yelled at and debated at. And I was like, I don't want to do this. He's like, oh, I thought you were a comedian. You can't handle this. What is even comedy? You're like Will Smith trying to censor people and slap, like, you're no better than him. And I was like, I don't know. This just isn't a fun dynamic for me. Like, I'm trying to get fucked by someone who's going to compliment me and be nice. Like, I don't, is that that hard? People are like, what's your type? I'm like, I don't know. Why don't you be nice to me and tell me how awesome I am and then fuck me? Like, is that difficult? I just like can't imagine being a dude who's like meeting a girl who's legit, like, meet me in my hotel lobby to then yell at her about comedy. And it's like, I'm sorry your life sucks and you had to take the bus, but why are you taking it out on me? I'm already fragile as fuck. I like fucked up the night before, whatever. You guys, this is a fun show. This is 420. I hope some of you smoked. I hope I didn't put you in your own existential crisis. What is this intro? I am sorry that every one of my intros for this podcast lately has just been me truly like losing my mind and energy, but I'm happy to get, I'm so happy. No, I feel lucky. Let's get this going. So what is amazing is, so I, you know, I've been doing comedy for a while before I got to the Comedy Store and like moved to LA, but you still get like new school, new student vibes, whether you've been doing something for a while or not. It's like a lot of people's home clubs, they've been there for years. You're just joining. It doesn't matter if you're funny or not. Like, you still want to make friends and have people like you or not, or figure out who's cool, who's not. Are you a molester? I don't know. And you just want to get to know people. And I was so lucky that our guest was one of the first people that like straight up was nice. We had met once in San Antonio briefly, but it was just like, it was just lovely. I don't know. There's like a few guys that right away were just very kind, open-hearted, nice to me with no expectations of anything. I felt comfortable. And so I just felt really grateful to have met this person and that they are in my life. Every time I see them at the Comedy Store, I get pumped right away. I know I'm about to have fun. We're gonna have a good time. Also a very generous person. I do always have to tell him, like, I would be friends with you if you did not give me weed. Like, I am to, like, we would be tight as fuck if we were not smoking weed all the time. But so generous, so kind, funny, good person, loves to eat like I do, loves snacks, loves delicious treats. Always at the end of the night, we're like, what are we going to do? Where are we going to eat separately usually? But we've had fun days at Norm's, Mel's, I think so. I don't know. And maybe I'm making stuff up, and we're usually just sitting in like this VIP area of the Comedy Store that is kind of like an alley with seating, but it means everything. And we're usually there. And even at the 50th Comedy Store party, it was just like, it felt like kind of any other hang. It was just like all of us out in the back, and it felt really, really cool. Yeah, so funny person, genuine person, cool as fuck. I think you're all going to wish him nothing but success and love after you hear this episode. Spark a joint, have fun. You're going to learn about, you know, gun violence. Get stoned. Let's talk about guns. No, we're gonna chit chat lots of stuff, some insider stuff. Don't get turned off that, like, if it gets too insidey, comedy, it'll grow and you'll relate to a lot of different things as well. And we obviously answer a couple emails, duh. So thanks so much, and get pumped for Frank Castillo, everybody. Super funny. Enjoy. All right. In honor of 420, there's honestly no other guests that I would even think to have. Frank Castillo, how do you feel about being so tied into weed and that it is your full personality? What do you feel?
You know what? I don't feel bad about it at all, because it's so funny. People are like, you're such a weed guy. I was like, well, I was always this kind of way. Like, I was always into like weed, like the industry and like news and all that jazz and like gadgets. So, I mean, I don't mind. Yeah, I like it.
No, and it's perfect. And everyone keeps asking why, you know, that I, you know, I told friends, I'm like, Frank's coming on for 420. Blah. And they didn't understand. They're like, why? Why? Is he an enemy? He's not an asshole. He's not this. But you are the king of internet petty. There's no one that gets into more. I don't know if it's righteous, but you have your standards, and when people are hypocrites or do not do things up to your standard, you will call them out publicly on the internet. You are always calling people out anytime we're smoking weed in the back, even though you're a chill dude and someone comes in being fake as fuck. When they leave, it's like, fuck that bitch. Why is she acting all over familiar? And you are this petty person. So has it always been this way? Have you always been petty?
I don't know if I maybe it's just the Mexican, chisme in me, you know what I mean? I don't know, man. I think it was, my wife is a psychologist, and she puts it the best way. She goes, you have a huge chip on your shoulder from the way you grew up, and you have no problem showing people that or telling people that, especially if you feel slightly disrespected in any way. And I was like, ugh. And I was like, all right, I guess you're kind of right.
And what is the way you were brought up that has to do with the, like, showing people and stuff like that?
I was raised by like two single parents. My mom was like a single mom. She like fucking worked her ass off. Same thing with my pops. You know, I grew up in like a really poor side of town, east side San Jose, and all this shit. So like, I don't know. I definitely have like a huge chip on my shoulder just about like life and comedy and shit. When I get to these places and I see people like acting fake or just, I don't know, it just it bugs me to no end, and I hate it. And like, I think the older I've gotten and the longer I've been in this industry, I've just stopped caring, and because of that, I can't hide my disdain for people.
Well, no, not caring would be not having the disdain. It would be caring. You definitely care.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And you really care about the respect at the Comedy Store. You get really bothered by people coming into rooms and areas of that place that are meant for just paid regulars and our friends. That bothers you.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is because there's this weird thing about, like, you know, I've been there for like I've been there for like 7 years, I think. And when I was coming up, I remember getting yelled at for being in spots that I wasn't. But also, it was very rare that that ever happened, because I had such a crazy respect for this place. And I love it that I would never go into a spot that I wasn't supposed to. You know what I mean? It's like going into your favorite restaurant and just walking in and be like, I'm gonna cook some eggs. You know what I mean? Like, that's fucking bananas to me. So whenever I see like comics talk about respecting the place and then just like walking, like sacred ground, you know what I mean? Like, that is purely for the paid regulars and employees. So I'll see people walk back there, and like once or twice it's like, all right, you made it back, that's cool, like, you know, shut up, listen. And then you'll be back there and you'll see someone and they'll just say some shit and you're like, why are you here? You know what I mean? And then like they get quickly outed.
Well, that's why I do love at the Cellar, and you would love this. There is a plastic little placard on the table that says "For comedians of the Comedy Cellar only." And there are people, and part of their reputation is if you're sitting there and you don't belong, they will put that plastic thing in front of you and be like, "Excuse me," especially if they're acting up.
One of the first times I was ever there, actually first and only time I was ever there, I was in town for the Skankfest New York, and I saw Dave Attell, and I've met him like a few times, and he always remembers me, and it always blows my mind that he fucking remembers me. He met my dad. My dad loves him, and my dad doesn't ask for pictures from anybody. He's not that kind of guy at all. But when he saw Dave, he like a child, he turned to me and was like, "Can you please ask him?" And I was like, "Absolutely." And that's like, I think he has that picture in his room somewhere because he's just so excited. Anyways, but he told me to come to the New York Comedy Cellar just to come hang out. He was like, "You might see some people," and I did. And when I got there, like, I saw Yamanika Sanders. She was so nice. She showed me around. She like introduced me to a few people. But even then, I was very like, this isn't my home club. I'm very much a guest here. And then I remember someone was like, "Oh, you should sit down." I was like, "Nah." I was like, "I'm not." I was like, "I can't. I'll sit over here." I was sitting at the table across from the booth. And they were just like, "It's so awkward. Just sit down with us." I was like, "I can't." I was like, "I'm not gonna." It's like the paid regular seats at the store, you know? It's just one of those things that, like, I know how important it is when it comes to perception and reputation at clubs. You know, you want people to like you. You want people to respect you. I don't know. It's always like the mafia. It's so dumb. You know what I mean? But I also think of that in Mexican culture too, where it's like respect and that machismo shit is so ingrained in us. So like, yeah, I'd never go and sit in that booth unless someone was like, "You are more than welcome and allowed to sit here." And then I'd be like, "Okay." But even then, I'd still have this like, yeah.
Well, and you really care about the Comedy Store and the process and comedy and everything. And so when you do get to finally be in those spaces, it's like such a big moment. And then when you Absolutely. See Riff Raff acting a fool, I understand. Well, we're obviously thinking of the same person when I talk about the overfamiliarity, but it bothers me so much when, like, I'm being hugged and, "Oh my God, I love you, blah, 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 great to see you." And it's like, we've never shared a meal. We have never hung out. We do not talk. And why are you doing this? And are you a mm-hmm. psycho? Or yeah. is this a calculated thing? Or is
calculated.
Is it calculated, or is it a sad life, or is it all of it?
I think it's all of it, because there's multiple times where that's happened to me with certain women. And in my head, I always think, how would my wife feel if she walked in right now and saw this person hanging on me? Because she knows I don't know this person. She knows we're not cool at all. Or she, you know what I mean? So yeah. It's like shit like that bugs the fuck out of me. You know what I mean? Like, you never touch me. You know what I mean? Like, my best friends that are women have never put their hands on me. You know what I mean?
No, but because you love your wife so much, it does make me more comfortable to be around you.
Yeah. And I think that's also a big thing too, where it's like, you know, yeah. Yeah.
Because there are people that are married that are still scumbags like, you know, they're not. But you talk about your wife all the time. And yeah, the way you love your wife makes me feel very chill to hang.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. She's also just, I don't know, man. Like, she deals with crazy people on a daily basis because she is she's got her master's psychology and she does like psychology stuff. So like, through being with her, you start to like learn and see things. So when I see all these people, I'm just like, oh man, there's a lot of people who are just fucking just crazy. You know what I mean? Like, they're bleeding on everybody publicly.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You see a lot of unwell people in Absolutely. Our line of work. And a big part of that people say is there's no barrier. You can do comedy mm-hmm. if you want. Maybe not at Absolutely. Certain levels or places. But if you go to open mics or shows or bar, like, there is no barrier to comedy. Anyone can do it.
Yeah. There'll be good dudes running jokes that are like on Comedy Central. There'll be people like that are writing on TV shows. Then there'll just be a homeless guy like screaming the N-word for 10 minutes. And you're like, well, he's you know, he paid for the 10 minutes. It truly is the value of what you do on stage.
Yeah.
So I was saying how like, I think that also adds to my pettiness too, is like, I say that saying what you do on stage also matters, but also this is Hollywood and being the funniest isn't always the thing that gets you what you need at the end of the day.
No, and there's people that treat you different throughout different times of your career, mm-hmm. what you have, what you don't have in different spaces. I've actually, at the Comedy Store 50th party, I ran into someone, And people always say this happens, but I don't always notice. But I fully noticed as we hugged them looking around for other people to talk to. And yeah. I legit was just like, oh, go have fun. And he then asked me a question and I go, it doesn't matter. This isn't what you want. Like, go do whatever you need to do with whoever you need to do it with. You clearly don't want to be around me. But it was wild where we've shared chiller times together and it's weird that you're looking over. And he's a very powerful person in the business or whatnot. But it was like, you shouldn't have to be looking around. It's everyone's trying to talk to you, bro. So I don't know. Yeah. It was just I had never fully seen that happen to me before. So I was happy to experience the classic Hollywood looking over your shoulder for someone better to talk to.
Yeah. Dude, it is gross.
Yeah, fake fraudulent stuff. And that leads us to one of your big call outs that I enjoyed. And then I'll spark it, but you know, a lot of people were pissed about D'Elia. Fair, obvious. We're not going to go into the ins and outs of D'Elia, but some of the people that were posting like fuck D'Elia are now happily opening for him. And taking their money, which is fine. Make your money. I talked to someone who is not wealthy in any way and doing comedy. And she was just like, I would absolutely open for him and I don't give a fuck. And I want that money. But she was not publicly saying, fuck this guy. And so tell me about that little journey. And then I always ask like name names because sometimes you call people out by names. Sometimes you don't.
Oh, but yeah. I'm always Gabby Lamb and Harper Rose. Yes. Absolutely. I don't give a shit. I think they're opportunistic white feminists. That's what it is. Where it's like, I was raised by women. I think feminism is awesome. But also, I'm a brown guy. So feminism to me, when I look at it, is like all-encompassing. It should be everyone. So when I see like people try to take these stances, especially as young comics, it puts you in a box. You know what I mean? Like you can have your opinions and stuff, but it's like, don't put yourself in a box so hard because when shit pops off differently, now you got to keep the same energy or you are now a hypocrite, which I think is like, I don't fault any young comic that's opening up for D'Elia now. Let me correct myself, who were friends with him before, because it's like, yeah, that's your friend. You got to defend him. I get it. I'm not going to like be a dick to you. Right. And there's certain people that are opening up for him that are like, I need the money. And it's like, yeah, man, you need the money. I get that. I 100% understand that. But then there's people who are like talking shit about the league and we're talking about burning down the Comedy Store. And then all of a sudden $2,000 is pretty nice. And then now you change. And I had confronted Gabby Lamb on Instagram. I was like, hey, what's up with this? She deleted her Twitter. Most of the big tweets were from her roommate, Harper Rose, and they have a podcast together. And they're like, you know, feminism, blah, blah, blah. It's like, nah, man, it feels like you're playing both sides of the fence. You know what I mean? Like, how could you hate the store, but also use this as a credit when you go out on the road and then also be fine with your roommate who's opening up for this guy after you've made such a crazy stance? So it's just, it's weird to me. Like if they both were just like, we need the money, I'd be like, fine. But also as white women, like that is par for the course. Like you get to do that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you get to be like, my bad, sorry. And it's like, yeah. And it's just so funny to me. It's just ridiculous.
Well, and everything's like written, so you can't really escape it. I guess she deleted her Twitter, but like everything you write all those screenshots. yeah, because I definitely, you know, I was in Horace and Pete, which is Louis's show. Multiple things can be true at once. That was one of the greatest experiences of my life. I'm so grateful beyond. It was like I got to act with Edie Falco, Jessica Lange, Steve Buscemi, Alan Alda, like Stephen Wright. I hung out with him every day. Like, are you fucking kidding me? And I can also think he's a fucking boob who fucked up and is arrogant and like didn't act right and still will not admit his mistakes and is kind of a creep. I feel like I can have both of those, but I understand anyone that would be like that hypocrite bitch. You know what I mean? Or also, I have had racist tweets in the past. So I understand someone going, oh, now you're this. And it's like, yeah, no, I'm smarter. I'm definitely smarter, better, wiser. And I was a dumb bitch. I was, and I will continue to be a dumb white person. That is who I am.
I don't think you're like a white person. You know what I mean? Like you're from Eastern Europe. So like,
I have my immigrant life and I'm a Jew and stuff, but I am white and I definitely was a white feminist who was like, what do you mean? Why can't one win for us is a win for all or whatever? Like, I had those stances. I for sure did. But yeah, that's what scares me about the world is I thought I was amazing. I majored in sociology. I was so not racist and educated. And then it's like, even me who was trying so hard was a dumb bitch on so many ways. And that's what scares me. The people who don't think they have a problem, who are like, I'm great and I'm not racist. That's what scares me. Because someone like me who tried so hard and thought, like, of course, you know, it was making constant mistakes.
Yeah. And it's just, I don't know, man. The thing that I was also trying to explain to this person, Gabby, especially because, you know, we talked to each other online. And my whole point was, it was like, yeah, man, like the whole Chris D'Elia thing went down. And that was like, the only people that benefit, I think, are white women in this situation. Whereas, like, I lost my first TV debut. Like, he was the judge on Roast Battle, and they pulled the full episode and just instead of just cutting him out. So, like, I lost the first time I was ever on TV. And that was a huge fucking deal to me. And I remember telling her that. She was just like, that's your, who cares? Get over it. And I was just kind of like, well, then how the fuck am I supposed to care about your problems? You know what I mean? Like, it's interesting to see those two take shots at D'Elia on his way down. And then when he's coming back, be able to benefit by opening for him and then making money. It's like,
because you also have to know, like, shit will change. There are consequences to behavior. And I talk some shit online, and there's someone that I considered like a friend for a while who really doesn't want to fuck with me anymore because of what I said. And it bothers me, of course, but I have to accept it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
And it's a bummer that we're not hugging and talking at events. I saw him at the 50th, and I know he's still pissed off at what I tweeted about D'Elia and stuff. And, like, you know, it is what it is. You have to suffer, non-suffer the consequences. Deal with it.
100%. 100%. And I think people like us will suffer the consequences.
Or at least just say, I'm a hypocrite. You're right. Because we all are. All humans are. There's not one person that's not a hypocrite. You know what I mean?
100%.
So that also is a thing. Like, admit it.
But also her thing was like taking the high road of like, well, you know, these fans need to see me because I'm a woman. I was like, bro, they've already made up their minds, you know? And I've seen your stand-up. You're not changing anyone's mind.
No, but that's how I feel. I did feel about The Cellar, because people were like, why are you performing there if Louis's there? And I'm like, why the fuck would I not? Like, that's crazy. But yeah, I guess that's different than just like opening for someone outright. But it's like, why would I not be performing and working at the best place ever?
That's the thing that bugs me, is when you talk shit about the store only because you're not getting spots or because of the way they treated you, in the sense that like you didn't get in, then it's like, that's a dumb thing. Like, be mad at the booker, be mad at whatever for whatever reason. Most of the time it's like you're competing on the same level as everyone else from everywhere else. And you're surrounded by the best. It always makes me laugh because when people talk shit, it's always like outdated information.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, oh, that's how I know you're not, you know nothing about the place because you don't know what the fuck's going on. Like, you're just making assumptions, or like, it was like, yeah, that was the last booker. Like, the thing that makes me laugh too is like, there's some people who complain about women at the store now. And I'll just be like, I was like, yeah, man, there's two women booking. You have the best chance out of anything right now to get in. All you got to do is be funny.
Yeah, and with them, it's like they also are, I don't know. I haven't talked to them, but I'm assuming they're getting pushback on their decisions or what they want to do.
Of course.
And they can't just constantly bring in only women. Like, they are on a path and a program as well. So it's like they're trying to do positive things while also there is a history to acknowledge and to, like, there's people who've been working there for decades.
Yeah.
That they need spot. You know, it's a lot to juggle, and people really don't have any sort of empathy of how hard it is to really book it. And it's a personal thing. And this happens to me, and it happened to me at The Cellar, where, like, depending on the number of spots I got, I'd be like, oh, they're mad at me. I did something. I'm on the shit list. And it's like, or a bunch of people were in town this week. Or there was a big movie filming and all these comics are here and I don't get a room. Or a favorite person is there this weekend. Like, you are, like you said, competing with very famous people for spots. And if they're in town, you will not get a spot.
Yeah. Like, last week, I didn't get a spot. And I remember being like, for a split second, being like, oh, my God, it's over. And then I realized, I looked at it and I was like, oh, yeah, we don't have a Thursday show because it's the anniversary and everyone's in town. Yeah. Like, people that have never done stand-up in years are back in town, or, like, haven't been around in years. And it's like, yeah, man, What do I have to fucking complain about?
But it's hard not to take it personal because you want it so bad, and you have to remind yourself, like, these people have to schedule so many people into their spot. One thing, even though I've been there for a short time and I didn't have to go through the development in the same traditional way, what bothers me is when I see people going on late and then complaining about the crowd or what the vibe is. And it's like, how will you ever get out of this time slot that you don't like if you cannot kill here? It's like telemarketing. I worked as a phone caller for alumni. And at first you start with the people who don't get. And then the better you are, then you get the alumni and you get the easier calls. And so when I see people go on late, or like I go on late and then they're like, oh, great, this is the time. Oh, you're not even lying. Oh, you suck. I'm like, why would anyone trust you at 9:30? If you can't get this 11 o'clock popping. And that's something that I personally have noticed, that I don't know if it, but I wouldn't say anything to anyone. I think you're fucking up your own life. But it is like, why don't you be a shining star and make these seven people laugh so much that now they got to put you at 10. I that's the one thing that I've noticed that I'm like, you're wrong. You guys are doing it wrong.
Absolutely. And it's, I think a lot of it is like, I mean, with anything in comedy, you get bitter, you get older, you're like, ah, and it's like, you know whose fault it's not? The audiences.
They're there. And it is hard to do it. But to me, it's like, entertain the people that are there, not thinking about all the people that aren't there. So it's like, that's the challenge. Can you make these seven people laugh? Not can you make a hot room laugh? Like, that's the point. You're proving yourself if you can do it, or if things go wrong, or like if someone approaches you, or I don't know. And pretty
I think that's what also brings me to like my next point. Like when I see young comics that I know aren't popping hard, that aren't in these clubs, certain people you see, it's like, yeah, I understand why you're not getting booked. Like you're good, but you're like not. All right, I'm gonna do a dab.
And since it is 420, I will be sparking this joint as Frank takes one of his technology hits. What is that called again? A dab. A
Puffco.
Puffco.
Yeah. It's an electronic dab rig, and then I just take dabs of rosin, which is basically just it's weed, but it's water and ice. They like extract, they fucking beat shit out of it, and they get all the trichomes, and then they
No, I always love when I run into people, and they'll be like, "Oh, did you hit Frank's dab?" And it's like,
"Yeah." Oh yeah, I've ruined some people's lives. Yeah, it's pretty great. So what I was saying was like I'll see certain people complaining about not getting in at places or not getting enough spots. And then I'll look at them and just be like, well, I've seen your comp. You know what I mean? Like, I understand why other people are getting more spots. But I think a lot of where like my pettiness comes from is like there's like up, there's like a, there's a type of white woman that complains about not getting spots and the patriarchy. And they're already like getting spots at the club they're complaining about. And it makes me laugh because it's kind of like, yeah, man, there's no Mexicans on any of these lineups. Like, it's me, Jesus, Francisco Ramos, fucking Chris Estrada, you know what I mean? In a city that's called Los Angeles. So, like, when I see them complain, it's like, I get it. I get what they're doing. But it's also like, I don't know, man. It just kind of makes me, like, if this city was called, like, Kombucha Lake Crystal, like, I'd be like, all right, you should be getting all the spots. You know what I mean? But it's just I don't know. I don't know if it feels disingenuous to me, but it's like, or maybe it's just selfish. Not... It's
they want it.
Yeah, 100%.
And sometimes you're just not funny. Like, I don't know why that's never 420. I just don't get why that's never the realization.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm not good enough. Maybe it's a system rigged against you. Both can be true, but they don't want you. Get better.
Absolutely.
Guess what? 100%. If you're famous and killing, it doesn't matter if they hate you or not. They'll have you on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's never them being like, God, I got to work harder. It's always like, well, that's not fair. I'm not there. And it's like, you're not good.
Yeah. Yeah. And it, man. And like, then, I feel like
you know, who said, this is a nutbag, Kurt Metzger, who, if he'd like to come on the podcast, welcome guest. We don't acknowledge each other. we've been through it, friends to enemies. But so, Kurt, this is an invite. But he told me something once where people say like, or was it Ari Shaffir? Also, open invite. But which one was it? They'll just say things like, well, that guy has it, so why can't I? And it's like, instead of looking at the worst person that has something and being like, why don't I have it? Why don't you look at the best person there and say, what do I have to do to be that person?
Yes.
Stop comparing yourself to the worst people allowed at a cool place and start comparing yourself to the best people.
Absolutely.
And then see what you're missing from there. Why do you want to be the worst person somewhere?
Exactly. Like, there'll be, you know, there's, and it's so funny because you'll see people like really like, you know, they're like, I'm fucking this. It's like, all right, we'll go do 5-10 minutes. And you'll see them do their 5 or 10 minutes and then they suck. And they're like, it's the room. And it's like, nah, man, you've built up your reputation to be this thing. And then now that you've gotten the opportunity, you have to deliver. And if you can't deliver, it's no one else's fault except you.
That's why it's better to get things too late. I always tell people, I'm like, you want to bomb at Montreal? My new face class, three people bombed.
Yeah.
And
I remember.
That sucks.
Yeah. At the store, they would do the JFL auditions and I would sit there and I'd watch and I'd get so mad because I'd see, and this is something I definitely got to work on. I'd see people getting it. And like, I remember there's one comic who got it and she was big at the improv. I think she's still in the Laugh Factory, but, you know, everyone loves her. She's gorgeous. She's like edgy is what they say. Oh. This girl was like a model. Anyways.
Okay.
I remember when I was hosting Potluck, she came up to me and she was just like, hey, Frank, how you doing? I was like, hey, how you doing? She was just like, you know, how is everything? How's your wife? Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, what the fuck? And she was like, you know, and then she just sat there, right? Because I was hosting. I was like, hey, what's up? And then she was like, do you think you can get me up? And it was like right before it switched to paid regulars. When you're hosting Potluck, you have to get up all the door guys and then the development spots that Adam wanted at the time. And if you didn't, you never got to host Potluck again. Or you'd take like, he wouldn't put you up for a year. So it's, you're like under constant pressure. So when she asked me that, I looked at her. I was like, I'm not going to put you up. I don't even think I said that. I was like, why would you ask me that right now? And she was like, what? She was so caught off guard and offended. And it was like, that just shows me how much you don't know about this place. There's 100 other women I'd put up in this spot right now if I could put someone up. So why do you think it's you? And it was also just so insane to me that she would like, we'd never met. You know what I mean? She knew my name.
And then you just see through her asking about your wife and all these things.
Yeah. And then, so ever since, I remember we were at the improv and then we were hanging out and she was like, you were really mean to me the first time we ever met. And I go, yeah, man, because everyone's going to be nice to you. And I'm not. I have no reason to be nice to you. I was like, you've shown me kind of how you are in the first 2 minutes. I was like, there's nothing I can get from you.
This is getting too inside.
it was just the audition portion at the store.
Yeah.
And I remember they had to follow someone really tough and they were like, ah, that's the one person I didn't want to follow. And I just remember being like, hey, if you're worried about who you have to follow on an audition, you don't belong in that audition. You shouldn't be there. Miranda Meadows had to follow me at the Netflix audition. She smashed. She's been in it 2 years, but she was like, I'm just going to go up and do the best I can because I'm just going to go have fun.
Yeah.
And she did. And she did great. She wasn't worried. She was just like, this is what it is. And I'm excited. And it's like, yeah, man. So there's a few young comics that I'm like,
well, not a young comic thing. This is a hot girl thing. And
absolutely,
that is a real thing. And, you know, like most things on the planet, it is men's fault because
I know
men just want to fuck 100%. hot chicks and lie to them and make them think that they're funny, cool, and interesting. And then when you're just normal, it's just like they don't see the world as, you know, we all experience the world differently.
There was a headliner that was, I remember I gave him shit in the hallway because he was taking out this one person. I was like, why are you taking that person out? They're fucking bad. And he was just like, whoa, Frank, blah, 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 talking shit. And I go, no. I was like, there's literally so many other people you can take. I was like, there's even women door people that are funnier than that person. I was like, it just looks like you want to fuck him. And then they didn't take him on the road. And that person got super mad at me. And then another headliner took him on the road. And, you know, that headliner that I originally was talking shit to was like, you don't give him shit. And I was like, I will give him shit right now. I was like, how did that person do on the road? And they were like, she's a really nice person. I go, how did they do? And he goes, she was a really nice person. I was like, would you take him on the road again and let him do 30 minutes in front of you? And he's like, she's really nice. And I was like, Exactly. I was like, are we booking nice people or are we booking funny people?
Yeah, but the road is different because you're spending so much time with someone and you do have to like the person. It can't, it's,
of course,
you know, it can't just be funny. There was a comedian who I do like and I will not name, but he one night, you were there, I think. I think we were in that video game room.
We were. I heard what you said. I think about that a lot.
And he said I would never bring a woman on the road with me for these dumb reasons. And I said, you've earned your right to pick who you want. I go, you didn't like this one woman. You could pick and choose. But to write off every woman ever is nuts. Like, and hopefully your daughters don't want to be in an industry and work for someone like you. Like, I don't know what to tell you, but and he has had women go on the road, and I get why he wants to be with his bros, and it's fine, but to like make a rule about it instead of just treating them like people and you might vibe with someone, it was fucked up to me.
Yeah, it was. It was definitely up.
How did you feel? So that was me in my element, and we were. I think me and him were going back and forth.
It was interesting. Okay,
so this is fun. We have a witness to me in the wild with a person.
And here's the other thing too. I think they offered me dates. I think the next week. And then I never heard anything back. And then eventually when I followed up, this was before the pandemic, we were supposed to go on the road and do theaters and stuff. And the pandemic hit, that all got canceled. And then I was like, oh shit. And then I'd never heard back from them ever again. And I've said like, hey, what's up? None. And then when they started the tour back up, it was like, none. I was like, all right, cool. You know? And I never said anything and never like brought that up, but it was kind of like, oh, that's weird. You know?
No, I think he's just like very busy, very popular, very cool, and decided against it or forgot or was like, whatever. Yeah. I don't think you can be mad at him for that.
No, not at all. It was just like, it's just, I wasn't mad. It's not like mad. It's just kind of like, all right, like, you know, like what happened?
What happened is he said it and he didn't mean it. And I have done that in my life.
Yeah, I
sometimes overpromise and underdeliver, and it is a bad quality that I have.
Yeah, yeah.
And but I have some like, shameful times in my life where I've done that.
But
I'm working on just not, but I definitely am in the camp of like, oh, for sure, hit me up and blah, 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 blah. And then when they write, I will not respond. I'm like, I didn't mean it. But then sometimes I will take the time and write you this big email and give you all the things. But like, I've been that person.
And but that was the other thing, too, is like I've reached out and just been like not even acknowledging that, but just being like, yo, what's up? Like, good job. Like, well, you know, just cool. Like how it was before. And like not. And
I'm know. Like, okay. This is the only thing I can say. This person is so famous.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And they are are getting over 200 texts like that a day.
Absolutely.
Because I would consider still good friends that have gotten very famous. Not him, but like other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And I just don't communicate with, like, but when I see them, I'm happy and it's fun. But I just know that I'm not, that's just not going to happen in this time.
Yeah.
Because even if you feel like a true connection with super famous people, we over-exaggerate our relationships with famous people. And it's like natural. And it's like, I'll remember every moment we've shared, but I don't expect you to remember me. But it's like, I just imagine how many texts they're getting. Cause I'm like, I just have like a robust social life. And
of course.
I'm working hard and I'm already just like ignoring the shit. I'm like bad at responding now. And then I just think about these super famous people and I'm like, oh, that's why they're not responding.
Yeah. Cause they got three phones.
Famous people are so famous and busy and everyone wants their moment with you because you mean so much to them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't mean a lot to me.
No, not this guy. But I do have to say, like, I had a family member that was a huge fan and he went out of his way for them to like take them backstage, spend all this time with them at a cool venue. And like, they left being like, oh my God. Like they felt so special. He's very nice. And I've had great moments with him and I've been to the house. Like I don't hate this person, even though they say insanely
not.
Like sexist things sometimes where I'm like, this is nuts.
I think what's crazy is now people just feel like it has to be so black and white. I think you can still like a person if they say a wrong thing.
Well, Frank, you know what taught me this lesson wildly? What's finally gotten in my brain is Yellow Jackets, a mutual shared love affair.
Yeah.
Because I read all the interviews with all the showrunners, directors, actors, like it was Yellow Jackets all the time, Yellow Jackets fever. And, you know, the ending in particular, I won't give any spoiler, but it's like the whole point of Yellow Jackets, not even the ending. One choice, one mistake, one moment changes everything. And in a person, and it's like, you don't have time to forgive. It's like, we all do bad things and we're good people and they all are flawed, but have goodness within them. And it's just the most relatable cast in that way, but not relatable at all. Cause it's like, they lived in the wilderness for 17 months.
No. Listen, I am a 14-year-old white girl at heart.
Yeah. Oh, my God. But yeah, he's like a really good person and has so many great traits. But why? Oh, yeah. But you were there when it was a tense moment. But our mutual friend, Steve Fury, he's always like, I just heard you were such a bitch. People told me you were. And he's like, I've never had anything but a great time with you. And I was like, yeah, this sucks. But I am a bitch to certain people that I don't like. And that's real. But I'm definitely not a bitch. I don't know.
No, 100%. I remember the first time we met, I was like, oh, you're like the nicest person I've ever met. Like, you're cool as fuck. And I think that too about me sometimes. And I think I'm very lucky because I've asked people, like, hey, man, am I like a dick? They're like, you are the nicest, chillest person in the world. But if you don't like someone, you absolutely don't like someone. And I've had people be like, oh, if Frank doesn't like you, what's going on here? You know what I mean?
So do you have any out of comedy beefs? Or what are other people you called out online? Like, when I told you to prep for this, what stories or people came into your head?
I got a whole list.
Why don't you go through this list?
I think we covered most of it, aside from Jennifer Gable and then my dad's ex, we went toe-to-toe online and in fucking public. So, like, my dad is a recovering alcoholic, and he's like my favorite person. I love him to death. He's my guy. Being in LA sucks because he's in San Jose and he's so far away and I can't keep an eye on him as much as I'd like to. And his kids aren't around. So it's just him in San Jose and his job. And, you know, it's easy to get sad and shit and just miss your kids and then fucking beat yourself up for shit that's not your fault or shit in the past, which leads to more drinking and shit. So for a while, there'd be a lot of like women he'd meet at bars. And that was kind of like how we, you know, meet chicks is he'd meet other sad people. And, you know, he's gone to programs now and he's like getting better and it's great. But he started dating this girl named Dina and she was, you know, when we first met, she was a sweet lady. And I've been hurt before by stepdads, people my mom's dated. So it's like in my 30s, immediately, I'm like, I don't fucking like you. Like I give you, like, I have a whole speech I give, you know what I mean? Where it's like, you know, my dad's the most important person to me. I don't give a fuck. Like, I will burn a house down, all that shit. And, you know, they were great. And I liked her because she was good to him. She fed him. She fucking, you know, they went out. They were, like, healthy. It was like, you know, he gained weight. He, like, moved in with her. It was all these things. She had kids. It was all the things that I felt needed in his life, you know? And it felt good to see him like that. And then after a while, I started hearing things from my family about, like, you know, she's not that nice. She's kind of weird. Like, small things. They didn't want to, like, come outright and tell me. And it wasn't until we started hanging out that I was like, oh, you guys are, like, drinking a lot, like, together. And I had to, like, you know, talking to her kids and shit, I started, like, kind of noticing certain things. I was like, oh, she's an alcoholic. And you guys drink a lot together. And then you argue and you get fights. And eventually, my dad kind of just had, like, he just came out and told me, he was like, yeah, she's alcoholic, it's bad. And I was like, oh shit. So I had to, like, put the kibosh on it. I straight up told him, I was like, hey man, I think this is a bad look and I think this is not healthy for you. I think you guys should, like, you know, I don't know. I was like, you guys got to figure some shit out. And then my grandma's funeral happens. We go there and there's, like, a huge fucking thing. Basically, like, all my aunts aren't talking to her or him. And I'm like, what is going on? So my aunts tell me everything. And apparently, when they were drinking, you know, my dad would confide in her about all of his insecurities, about the family, because it's a crazy family dynamic. A lot of sisters, a lot of brothers, especially after, like, his dad died. And she basically would get drunk, talk shit to all my aunts on Instagram, and send really fucked up messages over stuff that he had insecurities over, like shit from the past. You know what I mean? And it's like, why are you saying all these wild things to like my family members? And then I remember being like, all right, I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to be cool about it. We'd get catty a little bit. And then finally, you know, he calls me and like they're fighting and shit. He's like walking on the street, like just crazy, not good, healthy shit. So I called him and I'm like, hey man, like you guys got to break up. And they do. And then like a few months pass by and then she ends up, they post a picture of them together at a bar. And she like took over social media, like crazy shit. So I commented, I was like, I hate this woman with my whole fucking body. And she deleted the post. Before she deleted, another one of her family members like was like, this is fucked up. And he's like this big gangster. She's affiliated. And I was just like, I don't give a shit. I could give a fuck less. And I called my dad and I was like, it's either her or me. And I was like, I love you. I will support you in any way. I was like, but I can't. And I was like, it's not fair. I was like, I've forgiven you for all the shit that happened when we were younger and you not being there. I was like, but I can't let you ruin the other shit that I've got going on, all this. I was like, it's not fair to me. And he was just like, you're right. And then after that, he changed his life. He broke up with her and he moved out. I helped him. And it was so fucked up. So like, this is another story. So like when they were kind of breaking up, he was on the way to move out and they were like cordial. We were going up to San Francisco because I was doing shows and he was going to stay the week with me. This is when we were kind of like weren't talking, and me and her, like we just no communication. And he had told her that he was going to stay the week with me. And the week comes and she's like, let's go out of town. And he's like, I'm staying with my son. She freaks out, kicks him out with just the clothes on his back. So I had to like leave the shows I was doing, like in the morning before they started, go pick him up. It was me and him in like my friend's pad, you know, we were fucking doing the whole breakup shit and I'm talking him through it. You know what I mean? Just we're having like heart to heart shit about his alcoholism. So that happens. And that's when he really starts changing. He breaks up with her. She hits me up and she's like, you are the worst son ever. The fact that you would do this to him, that you would say that to him. She was like, I raised my kids better than that. I did so much for your father, blah, blah, blah. Like, she just, like, laid into me. And then I remember just being like, is this the moment that I'm going to rip this fucking woman a new one? And I was like, absolutely. Because she said so many fucked up things to my family. No one ever was mean to her. No one responded to her. She just got to tee off on everybody. And then I remember I looked at the roast battle trophy and I was like, yeah, I'm going to fucking burn this bitch. So the first thing I say was, eat shit and die. I was like, you're not a good parent. I was like, you've got four fucking kids. None of them are doing good. One of them went to college and is probably going to move out and never talk to you guys. Your son doesn't even see his firstborn. And that's because you're a bad parent. I'm doing this because I don't want my dad to drink anymore. And you're a raging alcoholic. I was like, you are not the hero in the story. You're an absolute villain. And I hope you drown yourself in oblivion. And that was it. And she like screenshotted it and sent it to like everybody, her whole family, fucking her son, her kids. She called the store and sent it to the store. And the store was like, the store called me and they're like, some lady sending this fucking screenshot. And I was like, yeah, man, post that shit. And they were like, cause bro, the store can give a fuck. And it was so funny to me because it was like, her son's a big guy. Her son can absolutely fucking demolish me. And the rest of her kids can too. And she's got family members that are gang affiliated, but it was just kind of like, yeah, I don't give a shit. If whatever happens, happens. And my dad was scared. And then a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks passed by and I was like, yeah, nothing's going to happen because that fucking message I sent was 100% true and it was 100% correct. There was no lies in that. I was like, she's not better than me. I was like, and your kids are great kids, but they're fucking terrorized by a raging alcoholic mom.
Jeez.
Yeah, man, I fucking went in, dog. But also, in her defense, I definitely took out like every ill feeling I've ever had as a young kid that was powerless with two single parents and whoever they were dating. So to be in my 30s and be like, oh, yeah, I don't have to do this shit. I don't have to play your game. I don't have to appease you. Like, I'm an adult with a wife. Like, you're just, you're just like a lady my dad's fucking.
Yeah. That's so good. And your dad is doing good. And how do your parents get along at all?
My mom and my dad?
Yeah.
Oh, they're, I mean, they're split now.
And, oh, I know.
Yeah, yeah. They get along for about 5 minutes before hilarity ensues. Like, they, and I truly, truly believe they still fucking love each other. That they are, like, madly in love with each other. And that if my mom ever left my stepdad, that my dad and my mom would get back together. And the
really?
6 year, and the fucking kid in me would be so excited. And it would be so fucked up because the rest of my siblings would be, like, so sad. And I'd be like, nah, I've been waiting for this for years.
I love that. How would your stepdad feel about that? That your mom's just waiting for him to die to go back to...
Oh, I'm sure my stepdad... I think I made that joke to my stepdad, and my stepdad goes, take her! My stepdad, and it's so funny because my mom will, like... She'll, like, complain to me about my stepdad, and it's like, I love the guy. She always complains about him. I'm like, this, I love him. I was like, he got me when I was 18. I was a fucking piece of shit. And he still was fucking cool. And he fucking, like, didn't have to be. He's a great father to my siblings. And, like, yeah, I was like, I can't. I was like, and it was, oh, dude, this is so funny. So my album came out, right? The only person I didn't talk about was him. And he, like, kind of got hurt. And, like, I guess he, like, told all of his coworkers about the album. They all listened to it. And they're like, oh, he doesn't talk about you. And, like, he had to explain to them the dynamic of the fact that, like, when I talk about, like, my dad, I don't mean him. Obviously, because he's a stepson. So, like, my mom called me and she's like, you don't make any jokes about him. And I kind of hurt his feelings. And I was like, why would I make fun of the only guy that's cool? Like, why would I make fun of the only guy that did nice shit for me? Like, why would I do that?
That's funny. Did he like that answer?
I told him that. And he started laughing. And I think I'm going to say that on stage because that's actually really funny. Because he was, man, that dude would be like, my mom was such a hard ass on me. Because all my cousins, some, like, most of them, like, turned out great. One side of the family, like, a lot of fucked up shit. Like, they're fucking wild. And she just didn't want me to be like that. And, you know, I never was. And, yeah, he got me and we'd go out and she'd want me to be, like, you know, focus, study, blah, blah, blah. And he'd be like, you want to fucking get out of here, go play some poker at the casino? I'd be like, yes. He'd be like, you want to go get some sushi? And then we would just sneak off and do, like, fun, cool shit together. And it's like, yeah, that guy's my guy.
That is beautiful. And how do you and your, do you feel like you're a better person because you married a psychologist?
Absolutely.
Okay.
100%. Because there's times where I'll talk to her. I'm like, why am I like this? Why am I doing this? And there's times where she'll challenge me and she'll just be like, are you doing this for you? Or are you doing this for the greater good? And I'm like, oh, you're right. You know, we talked about emotionally bleeding on people and she's like, is that what you're doing? You know? And I was like, yeah, you're
What's
right, man.
What's emotionally bleeding?
The whole idea of, like, you know, the chip that I have on my shoulder about everything and being in this industry, especially when it's like, you know, they're like, we're looking for this, we're looking for that, you know, and trying not to compare yourself to people, working your way up the way I did, it's hard to see other people and be like, I feel like they didn't do it the right way. And it's like, that's not a good way to think. You can't do that. It's not, you know, in some situations it might be true, but it's like, but that's not, I was like, she's like, you can't look at it like that because you're thinking of everything in negatives. It's like, you got to think of positives, you know? And it's like, is that their fault or is that just something you're projecting on them? It's like, yeah, that's right. You're correct.
How do all the families get along? How was the wedding element? What was...
Oh, man. The wedding was so fucking funny because it was like, you know, her family... that was the first time I purposely was like, all right, this is my whole family. You know what I mean? I was like, you guys can survive an 8-hour meeting. That's it. I remember talking to my family. I was like, don't fuck this up. I was like, do not. Let's not be... Because every wedding before mine, everyone got in fights. My mom has fist fought most of my father's sisters.
Oh my God, dude.
They've all gone to, they all went to school together on Eastside San Jose.
What's
white
trash for Mexicans?
I don't think there is white trash for Mexicans. Oh, although my mom, this is fucked up. My mom will say, So I don't think there's white trash for Mexicans.
That's just white trash of you guys. To
hilarious.
Fist fighting sisters at a wedding is so white trash.
No, I mean, that's hilarious. I don't know if that's white trash, but that's just kind of like Mexican shit. You know?
General Mexican cultural. Shit.
Yeah, my mom was beautiful when she was with my dad. Like, there's pictures of her. I'm like, God, she wanted to come to LA and become a model. Like, she was so hot. People have tried kidnapping her multiple times. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you do jokes about that? Wait, your mom? No, so I never hot, did. She keeps almost getting kidnapped. A flex. Like, that, no better flex than that.
So she went to Hawaii for her senior school trip, and the guy that she had met there, I guess, was just kept her.
She's so, like, an SVU fucking storyline.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, her dad and the police had to come and, like, grab her. She had to sneak out of the house. It was a whole thing. But she was like, she was telling me, yeah, I met this guy. We kind of talked before. She was like, he was the only guy to ever knock me out. And I was like, what the fuck? She used to fist fight men. That's how much of a feminist I am. I'll fist fight a dude. And I was like, that's fucking badass, bro. And I remember she was like, yeah, he was the only guy to knock me out. And I was like, really? He knocked you out? She goes, yeah. And we were fighting. We were getting angry. And he fucking just slugged me and knocked me out. She goes, and I remember waking up and being like, I love this man. And I was like, what? She was like, he was the only one to defeat me. And I was like, that's fucking crazy. My mom was wild back in the
day.
Yeah,
but then they probably fucked so good after that.
Yeah,
fight.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry
yeah,
to ruin yeah. it. Was your dad really hot?
My mom said my dad looked like LL Cool J. My dad was the star athlete of his baseball team. He was gonna go pro, and then he had me. My mom would always be like, he had a waist like this big, and he was just fucking ripped because he was like, he was great at baseball. My mom always makes fun of me for being chubby because she was like, you don't realize how athletic you could be and where you come from. And I was like, no, I get it. She's like, if you tried, you'd be gorgeous. I was like, all right, calm down. Like, let's not. But the wedding was great. Her family was amazing. Her family's like from the suburbs of Temecula. Her dad.
But hold on.
Oh, her,
your mom, though, like, she doesn't seem like she has the hot girl symptoms.
No,
that we
she
talked
was,
about earlier. It seems no, like she was fighting.
Yeah, she was Jenny from the block. She was she used to sell mushrooms and weed and shit in high school. She was like, yeah, man, this is one of my favorite stories to tell. My cousin, when she was in high school, James Lick, she was always getting sent to the principal's office. And one of the times the principal's telling a story, she was like, do you want to end up like fucking this student, Victoria Castillo or Victoria Madrigal or Victoria Ramirez? She was like, she would get in fights all the day. I was like, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, where do you think she is now? And my cousin was like, that's my aunt.
Oh my God. That's
oh
the
my
best
God.
Thing I ever heard.
Yeah, man. So I got another funny story if you want to hear it. Not funny. So my mom, my mom's a fucking badass. So I didn't hear this story until like later in life. And so when my mom had me young, and in her family dynamic, they were all very upset that she had a kid, and they didn't treat her very well at all. They didn't treat me very well. They were fucking dicks to me when I was finally born. My grandfather was also kind of racist. He thought my dad was black, so he didn't like me because he thought I was half black. And yeah, it was a whole thing. And anyways, so my mom was dating this guy. They broke up. My mom was married to being with my dad. And then they had me. And then the guy was convinced I was son. And I think it was like a party or some shit. And he showed up to the house. And there was a huge fight that breaks out because he's like, I want to see my son. And he was trying to get me. Like, he was fucked up. He was trying to, like, steal me from my mom and, like, everybody because he wanted to fucking see, like, his kid and be like, is this fucking my, you know? And it was a whole thing. Huge fight breaks out. A lot of people get hurt. And then they leave. And then maybe, like, half an hour later, they come back and they shoot up the house. And the house is getting shot up. And my mom has to run to the back and put me in a pot and hide me. And then, yeah, the drive-by stops and then they all leave. Yeah, that's pretty much the story. She had to come get me out of the pot.
I love that that's your funny story.
Yeah. I guess not. It's not really a funny story. It's just like a crazy fucked up thing that happened. And I didn't know about this till much later. I was like, bro, what was going on back then?
I cannot believe you were hit in a little pot. So can you tell me more about this physical violence, guns? Can you tell me about this
yes.
part of your life?
It's Eastside San Jose. I was young. This was like, you know, it was just crazy back then. You know, my dad, my dad was a big athlete. And since he was pretty well known in the school, you know, he's friends with everybody. And in San Jose, there's Filipinos, there's Samoans, there's Mexicans. So there's, you know, there's a lot of gangs. So a lot of the people that my dad went to high school with are either now affiliated or, I don't know, it's all family shit when it comes to gangs. So like a lot, like there'll be times where my dad is a Dodgers fan. In San Jose, you can't wear blue because it's Norteños and Sureños. So my dad's like one of the only guys that really gets a pass. Sometimes he gets his ass beat. He got his ass kicked like once by a bunch of young guys. But most of the older OGs know who he is, and they just know he's a Dodgers fan. He used to play fucking baseball. So a lot of like these guys have kids now that are affiliated doing wild shit. It was just something that we were just always around, you know, and I never really got into shit like that. A few of my cousins and family members got into it just because it's like, you know, when you're in Eastside San Jose and you're a young kid and you're angry at the world, like it's very easy to go off and do dumb shit. Both my parents worked all the time and they were split. So I just took care of myself all of the time and I skateboarded and just kind of tried to keep my nose clean. But yeah, it's always just around. You know, my cousin, fucking like an idiot, he, you know, was hanging out with his friends trying to prove himself. And, you know, he got drunk and was like, I'm going to fucking rob a gas station because he needed money. And his boy, he was like, you know, he told his friend to give him a gun and his boy gives him a fake gun. And my cousin goes and robs a gas station with a fake gun and ends up getting fucking caught and sent to jail. And he was like, I'm a fucking idiot. You know, he was like, I was dumb. I was 18. I was trying to prove myself because he had like family problems going on. He was just kind of like, that's what it all stemmed from. He was like, I was just angry. And now it's like, now he's a much better person. He's on mushrooms, but he's like, he's my favorite because I feel like he's learned a lot and he's had one of the craziest lives. And, you know, at the heart of him, he's such a great guy, but he's so angry. Not as much anymore, but like, you know, his wife ended up getting cancer and dying. And he's got a new lady that's great. He's got kids and stuff. But like he went through it, man. He had to like deal with trying to figure out how to get a job after all these offenses. And, you know, for a guy like him, you know, it's for a felon. It's tough. But I love bringing him around comedy because he sees a different world and he's like, oh, this is insane, you know. And he'll see like people talk shit. And he's just like, you're not going to like fight him. And I go, this isn't that place. You know, we do words. And I remember the first time he came and hung out at the store, he walked around and he was like, wow. He was like, you fucking did it, man. And I was like, what? And he's like, you were able to just do this and have a life without violence. It was so crazy for him to see that. He was like, I'm really proud of you, man. And I was like, thank you. And then he saw the Will Smith slap and was like, you know what? I think I'm gonna get into comedy. He was like, cause if we can just slap people, he's like, this is my shit, dog. He was like, my first 5 minutes, I'm gonna slap everybody in the front row.
And is he still violent?
No. We'll talk and stuff. And there'll be times where, and I think a lot of it's the mushrooms that helped. And we'll like sit and we'll talk and he'll be like, you know, I'll bring him around people. And sometimes people will tease him and he'll be like, why is that person teasing? And I was like, oh, it's just college, you're shooting shit. And he goes, yeah, I know, but that dude don't know me like that. And I go, oh, it's like, I get that. And he was just like, I was like, these are all just comics. And they're just fucking around. I was like, if you tease him, he's not going to care. And he's like, oh, okay. Because it's such a different world for him. And he was like, this is crazy. He was like, I like being around this. He's like, if this was me like 10 years ago, I'd just start fucking beating everyone's ass. And I go, yeah, man. I was like, but we don't have to be that way. And he goes, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, getting so mad and fighting. And did you get into any fights, physical?
Growing up, yeah. I used to get my ass kicked a lot by my cousins. But I never really like tried to like fight anybody in high school. I just kept my head down. And it wasn't until I was like in my 20s that I started like taking martial arts and like doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Because when I was 18, I moved to Temecula, which is like in Southern California. It's kind of like near San Diego. And that's when I got into like wrestling and shit. My dad was a wrestler. He loved to wrestle. So like when I started doing that, that's where I was like, oh, I like this. It was fun. I could do it. And I was like, I was good at it. I wasn't like the best, but I was good at it.
Like sport athletic wrestling, not
Brazilian jiu-jitsu, okay. Like choking people out and shit. Yeah.
This is amazing. All right. Let's do an advice. Let's do an advice piece. All right. Let's listen to this voicemail.
Hey, Lisa. I am obsessed with you. That's just what I wanted to say first of all. And I listen to both your podcasts, and in my brain, you are my best friend. Anyways, so I am a nanny, and I've been a nanny for this family for about 2 years. And before I worked for them, they had another nanny, and her name was Nanny Katya. That's what everybody called her. They still call her that. I don't really understand, like, the need to have nanny as a, like, predecessor to your name. Like, they just call me Cece. They don't need to call me Nanny Cece. Anyways, clearly you can tell I have some distaste for Nanny Katya. But basically, I've never even met this girl, but she is my enemy. Because I feel like they compare me to her all the time. Everything I do, not everything I do, but like very frequently they'll be like, well, you know, Nanny Katya did it this way and Nanny Katya did that. And basically I'm just really sick of it, and I want them to see me as the best nanny in the world and not Nanny Katya. And I'm rambling because I just want to talk to you so bad. But I've been trying to potty train the younger two kids because it's four children in this family. And I basically nannied the younger two, and the older two were the ones who were cared for by Nanny Katya. And I'm really working hard on potty training. And they constantly tell me, well, this is how Nanny Katya did it. And Nanny Katya would just sit them on the potty all day long and they couldn't get up and blah, blah, blah. And basically, I guess what I'm calling to ask you is, how do I let them know that I do not like being compared to this woman all the time? And how do I, you know, become in their mind the absolute best nanny that ever was? And when I say everybody compares me to her, I'm talking the parents, the kids, random people who just come over. Like, they're like, oh, is this the worst voice message you've ever gotten? Probably. Am I just desperate to talk to you? Absolutely.
I love this one.
Love you so much. Now I'm embarrassed for calling. Thank you.
That was incredible.
I love it.
I love it too. And this is what I'm going to say up top. Well, it was hard. Do you watch Drag Race? Like, it was hard not to envision Katya from Drag Race the whole time.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And I love the way she said it. I love you too. And we can be friends. Honestly, but you didn't leave your name. I don't think, but I would definitely hang out with you. So if this is a lot of assumptions on what I'm about to say. But if this Katya woman is a Soviet woman, which is what I think she is, you don't stand a chance. I mean, if she is my mom, like, if it was a Russian grandma, you are never going to be able to achieve that. Like, it's just kind of impossible.
100%. Yeah.
And that's true. She was probably making soups and cleaning. Like, there is
a difference. You gotta follow Bill Burr, dog.
Yes. Oh my God, who's calling me? Decline, bitch. Decline. Decline. Oh my God, emergency. No, stop. Stop calling emergency. Decline this call. What the fuck? That was insane. That was so loud.
Hilarious.
Oh my God. Oh, Jesus Christ. I'm like, I have to recover from that. Yeah, you're following Bill Burr. Like, because if you're an American young woman, you will just like never be able to do the sacrifice and torture it takes to nanny the way the like she probably did. You know what I mean? And if she was there for 8 years or however long, that's hard. What you need to do is not give a shit, be fun, and go, I don't care what Katya did. Like, start talking shit on Katya. Honestly, Frank, do you want to chime in or I'm doing a monologue?
Or you could kill Katya.
Kill Katya. No, where did Katya go? Be like, well, Katya doesn't want to be here, so I don't know what to tell you. You could say that to the kids when they're being really annoying. Or do we know what she looks like? I want to know about this. I just have a different thing because I never wanted or cared to be the best nanny. Like, so I just did it like whatever. So, you know, it's hard for me to relate on this way where you're like, I want to be the best. I want to be the Katya of this family. It's like, I never cared to be the Katya.
Yeah. Just be the you of the family. Huh?
But they keep comparing her. They're just, I don't know. I wonder if this family is Russian too.
Yeah, man. Russians. Woo, can't fuck with a Russian nanny.
Like, you're not going to like sit a kid on a potty all day. I don't know. And how do these a little older kids know how to potty training works? Like, that's so fucked up.
Yeah, man. That just reminds me of something. When I was a kid, apparently my aunt said that she walked into a room and I was shitting in the corner and she was like, what are you doing? And I was like, what happened, auntie? And I was just following her like ass naked, but like, what's wrong? Because I didn't realize shitting in the corner is not where you shit.
Yeah, having kids is so fucked up. And it's just a lot. It's just disgusting.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyways, you have to, you know what Katya did that you're not doing? And it's because of them comparing you to her. Katya was probably like, she overrode the parent. Like, she took it there. It's just a Soviet thing. Like, there's just no way. Unless I'm wrong. Yeah. Like, send another voicemail if I'm wrong. And Katya is actually another 26-year-old woman. But like, what I'm envisioning is you following a fucking
50-year-old.
Yeah,
woman.
That's what, you know what I mean? Who just ran the
house. She got experience, you know?
And did not give a shit. And people were, it's like Mrs. Doubtfire. If they had Mrs. Doubtfire, yeah, what are you going to do?
100%.
You go, you know, if she had Nanny McPhee, what are the other nannies? Nanny Diaries, Scarlett Johansson.
Oh, like, if there was Scarlett Johansson.
If there was an extreme bond, but I think you need to like stop caring. Do you want to be a nanny forever? Like, get out of nannying as fast as you can.
You're like, get a better job.
Get a better job. No, I did it for years and years and years. I would say
it's good money though, right?
Well, I worked for an agency as a backup nanny, and it was a long time ago, but I feel like I made 15. I don't know. I was never.
I mean, it's got to be a lot of money to make sure a kid doesn't die.
Yeah, but I was a backup. The one family I worked for, at the end, the kids were like, you're the worst babysitter we've ever had. And I went, I never really liked you either. I'm like, you're bad kids. And they were shocked I said that. And I was like, yeah, like, you guys suck, but the parents sucked. And they were just kids I hated. And I only had them 3 hours a day. But I can't imagine having to potty train kids day in and day out. Like, that fucking is hard work. And then to have to have the siblings and everyone and pick up lane parents and other people and the kids that come to the house and everyone go, well, Nanny Katya. But Nanny Katya demanded respect.
Yeah. She had the fucking hammer and sickle and everything. She was like, I swear to God.
Yeah, I'm so sorry you have to compete with that, but hopefully they'll see the special in you. But I think you should give them things that Nanny Katya couldn't, which is joy.
Yeah.
No. No, maybe she was loving. You need to be you. Put on music, like, you know, from the movie Stepmom, where they put on Ain't No Mountain High. Like, start dancing, be wacky, just be you and don't care. Go the other way. Go the other way and be like, I don't care.
Don't
compete. You're not gonna win.
I never had a nanny growing up.
No, clearly you were alone shitting in corners. Yeah. No one listening assumed you had a nanny. Okay, hold on. Let's do another one, but it's an email. Okay, so I'm going to read it, and then everyone will learn that I don't read that well. In my mind, this is a story of revenge against an enemy ex-boss, but they have no idea about it, nor does it affect them, but it makes me sleep better at night. I had a horrible boss at this nonprofit for a cause that I was absolutely unaffected by, i.e. it was a members of a religion ethnicity that I am not a member of. Okay, cool. Okay. They were the epitome of toxic positivity and had absolutely no leadership skills and knew exactly what to say to make you feel like you couldn't do your job. They refused to promote me. And when I asked about professional growth at the urging of my supervisor, they told me to just be happy I had a job. Others had similar stories, but I was the first to encounter the side of the boss, so I hold an extra large grudge. Anyway, I left, got a job that paid way more, and told some former coworkers that if our boss ever got fired, I would give the organization a $1,000 donation. This is how sure I was that it would never happen. Well, 18 months after my departure and following the departures of virtually everyone I worked with, the boss was fired, and I paid up within an hour of finding out. The boss will never know I made that donation or why, but in my mind, I got revenge on my biggest work enemy, and that's what matters. Love it, girl, because it could have been way less, but you said no. I'm going to get you gave all that money. That's so good. I hope the religion is not, you know, a bad one. I hope it wasn't Scientology or Catholicism. I don't know. I wonder. I hope it's a good one.
Pray away the gay. Yeah.
No.
She's like, we bought new electric shockers.
Yeah, I think she, like, I am so happy to do something good, petty, and it's sexier. It's honestly sexier to do something without needing your name on it or getting attention for something. Like,
yeah.
I'm not like that, and I admire people that are able to be under the radar of that. And just to be right, there's nothing better than being right.
Oh, so good. Did you ever hear the Chappelle and Dane Cook story at the Laugh Factory?
No, tell us.
So...
tell us the comedy tale.
So from what I understand, it was at the time that, remember when like Dane and like Dave were doing the back-to-back who could be on stage the longest?
Yeah.
It was like during that, and then I guess Dave pops in the Laugh Factory, and it's like, it's a Dane Cook night, right? And I think the manager there tells him, he goes, hey, don't go long. Please don't run the light. Like, this is Dane's night, blah, 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 right? And Dave's just like, all right, cool. So Dave goes up. Does 20 minutes on the dot, smashes, right? And he starts to get out, he starts to get ready to leave stage, and he goes, you know what? I don't do this often, but whoever wants to take a picture with me, I'll stay. And he's like, I'll take pictures with you guys outside. And so he gets off stage, goes outside, and the crowd gets up and just goes outside to take pictures with Dave. And then, yeah, they're like, oh, he's like, the rest of those people are here for Dane. And I was like, that's fucking crazy.
Wow.
That is, whoo, that is, man, that's spicy.
It's so funny, petty, good. I love the evil behind it, but it's so insightful. Like, who are you, dude? Wild.
Yeah.
Who are all of you fucking psychos? I mean, going back to like store stuff to really round out this episode, you really like buried the lead talking shit about comics who don't matter to like fully having a gangster upbringing in a pot. Like, it's shocking you hid that from us, but grateful to know it. Thank you so much. But, actually, we don't have to go back to this. That's giving it away. I'll say it. To know that comedians yell at the booker is, to me, disgusting behavior. When I found that out, I'm like, what are you doing yelling at someone at their job? Like, are you kidding me? Yeah. And that's what I feel with this story, where it's like, I love it because it's so it's just so good. Like, it's so good. But it is just like, what is up with you guys? Like, aren't you like, why aren't you happy? What is up?
Yeah, it's crazy to see that, like, because I worked phones at the store and did development spots. I was able to, like, have a good relationship with a lot of people. But, you know, I got to talk to Tommy, Adam. I've got to see all these new talent coordinators. And I've got to watch how they've been interacted with and stuff. So it's so crazy to see people, like, yell at them or just get on them, you know? Like, complain about the lineup on the marquee, you know, just these small things or stuff that people take personally for no reason. And it's just kind of like, you know, we have those small moments, but we're on this. I mean, you're on a different level than me, but we're on like, you know, so to know that even at the topest level, it's like you could still have those crazy thoughts and feelings. And it's like, oh, it never gets better for us.
No, you can work on that shit. Obviously, absolutely, we're all going to have the moments. You're right. That is 100%. But I think it's possible to not be the worst.
Oh, yeah. And all right, this is also something that I can definitely round out, is that I can be a huge asshole sometimes, but if people are willing to have a conversation with me and tell me why I'm wrong or whatever, I can be persuaded. I'm also about people having second chances. Like, I'm not like, when I talk shit about like Gabby or like Harper, like so much shit as they talked and as I talked, like at the end of the day, I would give them a spot on something. Like, I would never try to take away anything or fucking, you know, gatekeep or anything like that. Cause that's at the end, like, that's not what I'm about. I will absolutely make fun of you, tease you, and talk shit. But that's, you know, that's, someone said something. They're like, what if you guys are like in a room together? And I was like, I'm going to be fine. I'm not going to be like a dick to them. You know, like, I don't want everyone to ever think that I'm going to be like violent or fucking asshole. Like, I'm not that way at all. Trust me. I see how my whole family is. Like, that's the furthest thing I want to be.
Yeah, we all have our moments. We all fuck up. Time to talk about it. I think that's a beautiful end to this beautiful story. And I do have a big announcement. I'll probably do it up top, but maybe I'll save it for this moment. LAX found my leather jacket.
Oh my God!
Yeah, big reveal. Big reveal.
That's amazing, Doc. I'm so proud. I'm so happy.
I was patient and good, and I'm going to get my baby back, and I'm really excited.
I vividly remember the way you walked into the back to tell us that your jacket went missing. It was so funny. It was like,
I talked about it all night.
Like Kramer going through the door, you were like, it was so funny. You're like, you'll never believe what I lost.
Frank, give people what you'd like to them to find you. Give some plugs, information, shit like that.
Everything, all my shows, everything that I put out, you can find me on Instagram, Frank Castillo. I have a link tree thing in there. It's got all my dates, everything. And then I have a fun podcast called Peaked. We get stoned and we talk, you know, comedy and smoke really, really good rosin. So
rosin.
Fun stuff. And then, yeah, I'm at the Comedy Store all the time. Too much. I live there. And you catch me around in Los Angeles.
Fuck yeah, dude. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This was a lot of fun.
Okay, I hope you did love that. I know it is 420. It's a big deal. We did get high when we recorded. I've been high forever. I've been high every day for over a decade, and I am quitting weed. I'm saying it on the podcast, so it is real. I have hit my rock bottom. I know it's not a real drug, and it's embarrassing to admit it. My therapist did say, like, go to NA. And then I was like, I'm not going to NA for fucking weed, Sherry. Like, are you kidding me? And then I brought it up to one friend who immediately shut it down in the weirdest, rudest ways and made me be like, okay, I won't. But weird reaction when someone is that desperate looking for help to be like, you can't fucking do that if it's for this. So that's a friend I will not be opening up with about any life problems again. So sucks for me and them. But I don't want to do that. I don't know what I'm going to do. It is it's such a mild drug, but it doesn't bring the best out in me. It dims my light. It fucks me up. And it's just ruined too many moments of my life where I'm like happy and thriving. And then I get self-conscious and questioning myself and my worth and value and become an awkward person out and around. And I'm not putting this on anybody. I did encourage everyone to smoke. I want everyone to smoke. I want to smoke casually, but I truly have no control over it. So I am, and then once I said that, I smoked again, and I have one great friend who's dealt with addiction who was like, be nice to yourself. It's hard to quit stuff, and I know that. And even if I smoke weed after this declaration on this podcast, it's fine, but I really just need to rid my life of things that aren't helping me achieve what I need to achieve. I've gone months and months before, but I was in isolation with COVID with my family. So like, it's harder to do it out and about. And a lot of my friends are able to like smoke weed and have fun, and they've earned it, and it's exciting. But this 420 episode is the last. Is the last of the weed. I gotta get my weed earring out of my ear so I'm not a liar anymore. But I have a 5 gram joint in my backpack right now, but I'm gonna gift it to somebody and give away all my stuff. I don't know, but I'm not gonna smoke weed anymore, and we'll see what happens to my life and personality. But it's just fucking me up in a way that I don't love. And I've missed and left too many events too early because I get too stoned instead of enjoying the people around me in the moments. So I'm done looking inward high. I want to just be dancing drunk. But I wish all of you strength and coolness for all of your journeys and whatever thing you have to do, whether it's dumping someone that's not good for you, you know, not eating gluten because it makes you sick, or not drinking, or just taking a walk every day, or what other goals do people have? Going to grad school? I hope you fucking do it. Also, I did meet one of you on the road who was like, yeah, your podcast is so positive. When I saw The Enemies, I was like, I don't know if it's for me, but it's such a positive show. I was glad to hear it. Sometimes I get self-conscious, like, oh my God, should this be funnier? Should I be more this? Should I be more that? Should I be this? And it's like, no, I'm multifaceted. You can come see me do stand-up. So many punchlines on this. We're vulnerable, we're real, and we're trying our best. So yeah, I wish everyone a nice journey of trying your best and trying hard to be nice to yourself when you're not able to be your best. So wishing you all goodness, and we'll see you next week. And please follow and be a fan of Frank Castillo everywhere. What a lovely person. Okay, thanks. Bye. Enemies is a HeadGum podcast. Trish Hadley is our executive producer, engineer, and editor. Katie Moose is our supervising producer from HeadGum. Me, Lisa Traeger, I am also a producer. Hello. Thank you so much, Carly Jean Andrews, for the cover art. You're incredible. Jack Krause, thank you for the theme music. I love it. Please follow me on Instagram at either at GlitterCheese or at Enemies Podcast. Tell us about your own enemies by emailing enemiesthepodcast@gmail.com. or calling 323-677-1943.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.